I'm recording this session, and by early next week, it should be posted on our website for you to review and listen to again. So once again, this is Tom McCarthy from Raytheon, and just to let you know, I'm going to ask a series of questions. If you have questions, the students, what I would recommend or I'm asking you to do is use the chat function to submit the questions, and I will make sure that I respond. I ask Tom those particular questions. So here's a brief bio for Tom. Tom McCarthy is currently the engineering director for Common Digital Products at Raytheon Missiles and Defense, RMD, which includes model-based engineering, embedded SW, and performance simulation frameworks. He has worked in various leadership roles at Missile Systems for 19 years, serving as the director of the Modeling, Simulation, and Analysis Center, MSA, before his current role. Prior to assuming that, he has served as deputy center manager for Advanced Systems Development Center and MSA, department manager within MSA, and lead engineer for an international consortium in pursuit of NATO Ballistic Missile Defense, BMD, architecture development. In addition, he has served as simulation lead on multiple efforts. Tom was also one of the original co-founders of the current Raytheon standard for integrated flight simulations. He holds a PhD and master's degree in mechanical engineering from Arizona State University with a bachelor's degree in aerospace engineering from the University of Notre Dame. So welcome, Tom. We're very happy and honored that you're with us today.
Thank you, Betty.
Okay. So the first question I have for you is, what advice do you have for our students so they can get the job that they want?
So this will sound easy, but I don't think it is. And that's to really know what you want, right? And so, I mean, I'm talking to the School of Engineering, right? So you put calories into choosing your degree because you certainly haven't chosen the easiest one you can get, right? So it's already meaningful, but really peeling back why electrical engineering, why chemical engineering, or, you know, whatever field you're in, why did you choose that, right? What's driving you to spend the time to get a degree in this field? And really thinking about that and being able to articulate that to yourself first is the key to understand what types of job you want. Right. A lot of people, you know, they say, well, I want to be lead technologist for Google. Well, really, that job is probably a lot like my job now, which is sitting in meetings all day long. Is that why you're going to school? You know, maybe. But what is it about engineering that you like? Think about that and then start looking at the job recs to understand, are they dialing in the things you want to do? Because when you find a job that you are both good at and you like doing, you will excel, right? If you're good at it and you hate it, you're unlikely to excel. So really understanding what it is you want to do and why engineering is exciting to you, I think is the key. Because then you can start looking at the jobs and you can start asking questions of people like me about specific jobs and see if those line up with what you want to do.
Okay.
So it sounds easy, but it's really not. So right. I would encourage everyone to really start thinking about that, writing it down, maybe bouncing those ideas off of people to see if they make sense.
Right. Usually when I meet with students and I ask them what the focus of their degree is, and if they tell me, you know, that they're not sure, and I said, well, then an employer can't help you with that. You know, you have to know that yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Can you describe the role that networking plays in getting a job?
So, yeah, this can be huge, and it can also be difficult for college students. But anecdotally, right, if I know someone and if I know you well, and you come to me and say you're looking for a job, and I can actually speak on your behalf at some level, I will do that when I send your resume off to a hiring manager. If you're just some person that, you know, we traded a couple of emails, I'll still send your resume off to the hiring manager, but there will be no sort of endorsement from me. And that's a big deal, because if I endorse it, and I'm not speaking about myself, but I'm just speaking in general, right? If we endorse resumes when we send them off to hiring managers, they'll look at them, right? If your resume goes into the system, they may or may not ever see it. But if it comes from another hiring manager and says, hey, Mary is really good at this, I've been speaking to her for the last several months, I'm impressed with her ambition, she seems to do well in this area, that's going to carry weight. So networking is a big deal, because it helps make sure that your resume gets to the right person, and it helps line up maybe that first phone call, which can then get you the interview. Because if you get that phone call, right now it's in your hands, really, well, sort of. But at least you have a big stake in it, because now you're speaking to what you're capable of doing. So networking is about getting in the door. And networking is also important while you're in the door, but that's a separate topic, I think. So I would say it's important. Is it? Can you get a job without networking? You absolutely can, right? So if you're unable to do this, it's not a deal breaker. It's just a discriminator that's going to help you, right? It's going to increase your chances of getting that resume. So that's my opener. I think there was a second part to that question, wasn't there?
Yeah. Can you identify paths for students to use for networking?
Yeah. So at the hiring events, for example, there's a lot of companies, Raytheon included, that come out either the day before or the week before, you know, that hold information sessions. Go to those. And don't just sit there and be a tourist at those things. Go to those, ask questions. And importantly, introduce yourself with a resume when the thing is over, right? Because, I mean, it's nice to talk to people in kind of the classroom setting, which those things tend to be. But afterwards, I know Raytheon, we stand around and we talk to all the students that are interested in saying something to us or asking us questions. And that makes you much more memorable, right? And so the key here at these events, right, there could be 40 people, there could be 60 people. You want to be memorable in a good way. So how are you going to be memorable? You're not going to be memorable if you hand me a resume that says you're a good student, because that's, I get a lot of those. Do that, but that doesn't separate you from the pack. An interesting fact would, for example, I'm in a rocket club. That would be of relevance to me down here at Raytheon, right? I'm the youngest of 17 children, right? It doesn't have any relevance on engineering, but it's memorable, right? So think of something that helps you stand out so that I can remember you, because I talk to a lot of people, right? And all hiring managers talk to a lot of people. So if we're able to say, oh, that's right, Michelle's the youngest of 17 children. I remember talking to her. She was good at this and this and this. I think, you know, we should talk to her for an interview. That helps. So stick around and definitely attend those, right? And I think the College of Engineering posts what all those things are. So reach out. So do that. Get involved in the clubs. And, you know, there's a zillion clubs, but the clubs like ASME, for example, I'm a mechanical engineer, right? They have events where industry at some level comes out and helps either support or judges or things like that, right? And it's another opportunity to meet people from industry. So it's about finding ways to meet people in industry, so that you can become memorable, and so that when your resume gets passed along to that hiring manager, it comes along with an endorsement. And that endorsement's big in helping make sure that your resume gets read and reviewed, right? There's this thing called a halo effect, and maybe we don't talk about it, but suffice it to say, if I hand your resume off to a person that I know and that person respects me, and I say Joe is very good, that's going to be a very positive halo effect for Joe, and my friend that I handed the resume to is very likely to give you a call, right? That's the positive halo effect you want. By the way, there's a negative one too, so make sure you're making a positive effect, effect.
Yeah, so stay away from the negative. halos, right?
Be memorable for the right reason.
Yeah. It's like this person came to me and they were dressed in a cape and a t-shirt. You don't want that as a memorable impression. So anyway.
Correct. And I would remember that. And it would not be favorable.
Okay. Good example. What makes a resume stand out to you?
So in a nutshell, it's if you make it obvious to me why you are the right person for me to interview. So there are some key steps associated with that. One, don't write paragraphs. Hiring managers, we get hundreds of resumes. So our initial review of them is less than a minute. So we're not going to read paragraphs. Make it easy to read. Put the critical information at the top, again, in easy to read format, which usually means bullets. If you have a summary of your skills, you might be able to do it in a paragraph. But if what I don't want to see isn't in the top quarter, third of the resume, I may never get to the bottom, right? So if the most important thing on your resume is buried on the bottom, it may never get seen. So get it up top. Summarize your skills helps. Right. So I usually recommend to people that they have either above or below their education, kind of a summary of skills. Here's the things I'm trained in or good at. And be honest, right? We know that college graduates aren't going to be experts in mechanical engineering or electrical. So couch your skills in terms of what it is you learned at school and how, and this is the key part, and how it's applicable to the job. Right. So your resume, you should have a different resume for every job application. And it's not a complete rewrite. You start from a template, but don't make it generic. If it's generic, right, it's kind of good for everything. If you specifically tailor it to what I'm looking for in my job rec, and by the way, I tell you in my job rec what I'm looking for, it makes it easy for me to say, this is a potential candidate, we should call her. So make it easy to read. Make it visually appealing. If I just look at your resume and it's a wall of text, I'm not going to read it. I'm going to go on to the next one. If it looks good, I'm going to read it. I'm going to start reading it anyway. And importantly, unless there are some really mitigating circumstances or you're a PhD student, make it one page. Right? I am a PhD graduate. I have been working for 25 years. My resume is 2 pages. People don't want to read long resumes, right? Being able to summarize your skill set in a page is actually a skill we look for and want. So if you make your resume 2 pages, you kind of failed that first test. So make it a page. Sometimes there are things, it's like, you know what? I've had 10 internships. And I have 3 degrees. I can't get it in a page. Fine. But if you're a master's with 1 or 2 internships, you can get that on a page.
Okay. What about the students who don't have internships? Sometimes they're discouraged about what they do have on their resume. So what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, so internships are definitely better. But, I mean, we hire a ton of people without internships, right? So don't be discouraged if you don't have it. Again, look at the rec. This goes back to kind of my first 2 points. Know what you want to do, so that's important. And then look at the rec to see what the rec is looking for. And then find ways to couch what you are doing in those terms, right? So some people work at McDonald's when they're going to school. Well, so McDonald's experience really doesn't have anything to do with engineering. But here's what it does tell me. It tells me that you're at least pretty good, maybe great at time management because you're working, support yourself while you're going to school, which is a full-time job, right? But there's also teamwork skills, communication skills, things like that at these other jobs that are still applicable. So really any job you take has applicable skills typically to the job you're applying for. So don't undersell those. I mean, don't oversell it, right? Don't give me 20 bullets on McDonald's. Give me 3 or 2. but find ways to make sure you're couching your projects and whatever work experience you have in terms of the skills I'm looking for. So that's one. The other is go learn stuff on your own, right? Right. I'm a sim guy. That's what Betty talked about in the intro. So I used to build sims for a living. That required programming in C++. Well, you know, sometimes you take a class, sometimes you don't even take a single class in C++. So if you know that jobs require C++, go teach yourself and then put that down on skills. Maybe create a project, build something in C++. And put that down on your resume. Just say, I did this because I thought it would be cool, right? You can do that in mechanical. You can do that in any engineering domain. Build something, whether that be digital or physical, and find a way to basically make your own internship, right? Come up with a way to give yourself experience in the field that you want to do. Because that's going to show, one, initiative to go learn things on your own, and it's going to start to speak to your passion about what it is you want to do, which is, again, back to that first question, know what you want to do. So find ways to get experience. Internships are great, but they're not the only way to get experience.
Okay. All right. Excellent advice. In an interview, what are common mistakes that students can avoid?
Okay. I'm going back to the broken record. Know what you want. Right. I think you mentioned it, Betty, right? If you say you don't really know what you want to do when you grow up,
right,
that is not good. Have an understanding. It's okay if you're wrong. We get it, right? You're not actually committing the next 30 years to that path. You just think it's the right path. So take the best information you have and make a decision about what you want to go do. So for sure, know that. Be able to articulate your strengths and your weaknesses. Those are pretty obvious, but people don't do great at them, right? And so the strengths goes back again to things you are good at, but also things you want to do. And if you're great raising children or something like that, okay, that's interesting, but that might be a missed opportunity because I may not actually care for the job I'm working for, right? So don't miss the opportunity to couch those strengths in terms of stuff that I need for the job, right? So, you know, for job A, you might list these three strengths. For job B, you might have another three. Now, you can't lie and make stuff up, but you can have six total strengths. So just dial in the appropriate strengths for that job. Weaknesses is, right, we're not, it's not so much trying to find out where you're weak per se, but it's really about self-awareness and understanding that no one's perfect. Everyone can grow, right? And this is true of me. This is true of anyone. We can all grow. So having the self-awareness to know, you know, in this area, I would like to get better than I currently am for whatever reason. Maybe it's communication, right? Maybe you're not great at programming, but you want to get better at it, right? I don't know, but have the self-awareness to know. And then you want to try to spin that back into a positive by saying, hey, I want to get better in communication because, you know, I'm okay face-to-face talking with people and working in teams, but I'm not great standing in front of a crowd and presenting, right? And a lot of people aren't, but something like that. So try to tie it back to a strength that you can use to build up that weakness is usually helpful.
Okay, that's very helpful information. Are there any differences in resumes and interviewing for internships versus full-time positions?
I mean, the short answer is no, not at Raytheon, right? I mean, the only difference is you're just earlier in your scholastic career, so you may have less stuff. So you don't want to turn in an empty resume that only fills half the page, and don't try to fill it by making the font 14-point, you know, inch and a half margins. You got to find a way to make it visually appealing. So you got to fill it with something. So, but in general, there's no difference. We get the resumes the same way. We do a phone screen the same way. I'll say the one difference at Raytheon is we might make an offer after a phone interview, which we would not do with a full-time employee, right? We would do that in person. Well, I say in person. In this day and age, we might not do that in person, but we would do it in the equivalent of in person. But in general, it's the same basic process.
Okay. What are some specific actions that a new hire can do during the first few weeks and months to smooth the transition to the work environment?
Well, I think it actually starts before you start, right? So not in the first 2-3 weeks of the job, but maybe right after you get the offer, right? Which reminds me, if you're looking for internships, do it in the fall. They're all filled by the end of the year. So we interview in March for some of those, but they're mostly gone. So definitely be ready in the fall to interview for internships. Which kind of leads into the point I was about to make, which is, right, you'll get the offer usually well in advance of when you start, ideally, right, and then you don't have to worry about it. So when you get the offer, ask the hiring manager, or if it's a talent acquisition person that you're speaking to, ask that person who the hiring manager is, reach out to that hiring manager and say, what can I do between now and my start date to make sure I'm ready? And then start having that conversation. Right. So in my old job, I needed people that could code. Well, a lot of people don't necessarily have coding experience in engineering. So I would say, you know what, go buy a C++ book and start training yourself on how to code, might be an example. Another example might be, hey, go to this website and look around what they have there. It's pretty relevant to what we're doing. It will be helpful. That kind of thing. There's soft skills, right? Communication skills can never be too good. So brushing up on those is helpful. There's the getting acclimated, right? If it's a city you've already lived in and know well, then that's pretty easy. But if you're moving across the country, you know, start having that conversation with the hiring manager or TA, talent acquisition, about, you know, where does it make sense to live? When's a good time to come look if you're going to be buying a house or, you know, doing a house hunting type trip? So that you don't have to worry about that in your first 2 weeks, right? It's best to be settled, you know, already, so that in those first 2 weeks, you're not having to worry about housing and all that other stuff, getting your bank account set up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So get that stuff done, you know, as early as possible, and just have the conversation with the hiring manager. Usually they're very happy to help, and it doesn't really take much of our time to do that. You know, it's good. So it's easy to do. We're happy to do it.
Yeah.
Then when you get started, you know, ask questions. Right. In school, if you're taking a test and you lean over and ask a question of the person next to you, that's cheating and you get in trouble for it. We try to train that out of you immediately once you start. Right. We want you to work together. If the answer is already known by someone, I don't want you to learn it. I want you to just get that answer from that person, because the problem we really have to solve isn't yet known. So ask questions. If you're bored and you might be in the first 2 weeks, monitor that and start to have a conversation with your boss about that. And that's trickier, but sometimes, you know, it's not great, and certainly not proud of this, but we don't give the care and feeding we need to of new employees. We just kind of assume they know everything because we do, and it's not fair. And so if you find yourself in that situation, don't be afraid to let your boss know you're stuck or you don't think the work is, you know, maybe challenging enough. But just do it in a constructive way, not a, this is garbage task someone gave me. I finished it in 2 minutes. Why can't you give me real work? Or along the lines of, you know, I think I can take on more, right? I think I'm getting through this stuff pretty quickly, and I'd like to do whatever I can to accelerate my growth. Frame it in that way, right? So do some stuff before you start by talking to your hiring manager. Ask for help, and don't be afraid to reach out after you start.
Okay. Do you look at LinkedIn profiles for candidates?
So I don't, but our talent acquisition does.
Okay.
And they're also going to, and I think every company is going to do this, right? They're going to go check out your social media profile. If it's, you know, a bunch of pictures of you doing foolish things with your drunken buddies, that's not going to go over well. So don't post those.
Yeah, can't stress that strongly enough. So do you review student portfolios as part of the hiring process?
What's a student portfolio? We might.
It may be some of their work that they put together. Maybe
Sometimes, right? Sometimes people will give us links on their resume of, say, hey, I got this project.
Mm-hmm.
We'll click on it, see what it's about. It's a good way to get a lot more information out there, right? That, because I told you, make your resume a page. Mm-hmm. Well, you can just put three bullets on this thing and then put a link. And if I'm interested in it, I'll click on the link to go get the details. So if you have something like that, yeah, I'd encourage you to do that. You don't want to rely on that, right? You want that to be additional information because, again, you want to get that resume. You want me to read it. And I may or may not have access, right? I might be reading a hard copy. Obviously, I can't click that. But I would encourage people to include it. Okay. Sometimes people put it up with their name in the header, too. They'll have, like, a web page or something that's got their projects on it.
Okay. What are your company's plans for recruiting, especially with this COVID? I know some companies have kind of, you know, are reevaluating their budgets and things like that. Are there any changes that you have planned for this coming year?
The short answer is no. Okay. Right. So we just merged with United Technologies. And so as part of that, Raytheon was four businesses. So the former Raytheon, those four businesses became two, and then the four UTC businesses became two, and then together we're back to four. So there's substantial change in that, but our vice president has been very clear that we will not slow down our hiring goals, which are pretty substantial, right? We're looking to hire a big number still. We always need college students. So we are still hiring, and we will continue to hire. What our specific plans are with COVID relative to, like, how we can interview and things like that, I don't actually know. I was talking to our campus recruiter, Billy Hansen, right, who's our ASU campus recruiter. He says that ASU is going all virtual for the fall career fair.
Right.
I don't know how that will work, right?
Yeah.
I wish that we were in person, but obviously, right, we have to be safe. That's first and foremost. So, you know, given the situation we're in, there's no way we could do in person in the fall. Well, it looks very unlikely anyway.
Right.
So we'll make it work, right? And it'll be a learning process for all of us. So it'll be a little different for the recruiters, i.e. me, and it'll be a little different for the interviewers, i.e. you. So, you know, I would say the more you can help us get good at this, the better that will make you look. So, I don't know how you will do that because I honestly don't know what this will look like. But it might be a way for you to separate yourself from the pack by having good ideas, right, and being ready for the whole virtual environment, which is different.
Right, right. And that could even be a strength, you know, as far as being adapting to new technology in the hiring process.
Exactly. Adaptability is a great strength and it's normally applicable to just about any position. So you can demonstrate it through the whole virtual hiring process.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to open it up to students with questions. I have one question. I was wondering, would 3 1-year internships or 1 3-year internship look better to a hiring manager?
Huh. I think it depends. But I don't know ultimately that would make a huge difference. Right. So here's what I would wonder about, right? If you had 3 1-year, if you had 3 separate summer internships with Boeing, one of our competitors, and you're interviewing with me, I'd wonder why you weren't getting hired by Boeing. Right. Or are you just interviewing with me just to shore up your interviewing skills or maybe even try to get an offer from me to help get a better offer from Boeing. So that would be one of the potential downsides of sticking with the other company. The upside, of course, would be if they keep bringing you back summer after summer, they're definitely going to offer you a job if they have positions. But bottom line is, if you have three internships, I'm going to talk to you, even if all three of those are with our competitor. Okay. Maybe, especially if they are, right?
Right.
The 3 1-year, right, normally bouncing around from job to job is not good. But for an internship, I think it actually is good. So the benefit of getting three different one-year internships would be you get to see a lot more stuff. So you're going to have a better sense of what you want to do. So you are more likely, I would say, to make a better choice as to what your full-time job would look like. So that would be a positive too, right? So there's going to be positives both sides.
Okay. All right. What roles do self-identification and voluntary self-identification of disability play in the application process or screening? Are chances increased if I skip this information?
Well, no is the short answer. So hiring managers don't see that information, right? The only way we would see that information is if you put it on the resume, which people don't do, right. Normally anyway. So we're not going to see whatever it is you selected behind the scenes. We're just going to get the resume. Would it help? It certainly wouldn't hurt. Would it help? It might, right? If a company thinks they need more people of color or people that have disabilities, then they might be inclined to pass those resumes on. So it might increase your odds of getting the resume into a hiring manager. Certainly it won't be used against you, but you know, people have to answer what they're comfortable with answering. So if you're not comfortable with answering that, it certainly wouldn't hurt you as long as it's not a required field, which most of those things are not.
Do you hire international students?
Well, generally no, because certainly at Raytheon Missiles and Defense, almost all of our jobs, particularly the engineering jobs, require a clearance ultimately. You can't get those unless you're a U.S. citizen. Okay. So it's very difficult at Raytheon. Now, as we've merged with United Technologies, so now we're Raytheon Technologies, they have a much bigger international footprint. They're not really DOD, Department of Defense. It's more commercial aviation. So that's better. That makes it a lot easier. Then you just have to be able to work in the United States. And that's a lower bar than being a U.S. citizen. But also there are a few, it's less, but there's actual landed companies in other countries. Again, more so with United Technologies side of the house. So for Raytheon Technologies, I would say, look, it should be, well, I don't even know what it says, but hopefully there's an indicator that says, hey, this job, it's okay. This job's limited to U.S. persons or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. In the thousands of resumes that you look at, what has caused a resume to stand out the most? Would you recommend that students focus on developing their work experience or technical skills, or would the visual design of the resume be more important?
Well, so the resume has to look good, but I would caution against spending a lot of time on the visual aspect, right? Sometimes we get these two column ones. And for the most part, I don't like those because I got to start searching around and I don't know which way to read it. Right? If you give me the standard one page with bullets, I know how to read the thing. I don't have to think about that part. And that sounds incredibly lazy, but we get thousands of these. Mm-hmm. So don't make me guess, right? So make it visually appealing and not just to you, because we tend to fall in love with our work. I would encourage you to share that with multiple people and ask them that question. look at this resume. Does it look like something you might want to read? In terms of technical skills and job experience is going to win over technical skills in the absence of job experience, right? Because it's kind of proof. So if you have the job experience, make sure that's there. But what's going to make the resume stand out, and what does make the resume stand out for me, is if in that first quarter of the first top quarter of the page, it's obvious to me that you are at least claiming the skills that I need for the job, right? So I would put down maybe aerospace engineering, C++, and analysis or something. If you have skills that directly map into what I'm saying I'm looking for, I'm going to read the rest of your resume. And then you can start going into a bit more detail about, you know, why it is that you actually have that experience or skills that you're claiming. So make it obvious in the top quarter page of your resume why you are the right person for me to give a call to.
Okay. You're pretty much supporting what we advise students in developing their resume. So thank you for that validation.
Well, thank you for advising that, because not all schools advise the right thing.
Right. So when networking with people, how do we help the individual from the industry or firm get to know us better and endorse us as applicants if the interaction is not very long?
Yeah, it's hard. No question. First of all, that interaction has to be a good one. So be prepared, right? Don't just think you're going to wing it, because that generally doesn't go well. It doesn't go bad, but it doesn't become memorable in a good way. So be prepared. Have an idea of what you want to talk about, and sell yourself. You know, don't be obnoxious, but sell yourself in that first impression, right? And again, you're going to make yourself memorable, so I'm going to remember you, and then follow up. Most people, certainly I do this every time when I'm asked. Sometimes I don't have business cards, but if you ask me for a business card, I'll give it to you. And frequently I'll just hand them out, right? I mean, that's what they're for. Send a follow-up email. Again, put some thought into it. Hey, Tom, thank you for talking with me. And then mention something about that conversation to, again, help me remember you. You know, it was great talking to you about that coding. I'm glad you recommended I buy this book. You know, whatever it is. Who knows what we talked about. But something. Don't make it super superficial, but just short and sweet. I don't want to read three paragraphs. Thanking me for my time, you know, and calling up something memorable. And that will help. And then the next time I come out, look me up again, right? There are people on the ASU campus who I recognize now, right? And I saw the guy at the last hiring event. I walked over and he remembered me, and we started having a conversation again. So it's possible, right? He made a solid impression and he kept following up year after year. So if you're a senior now, right, you don't necessarily have the year after the year, but if you're a freshman, you can keep following up year after year. Relationships require energy, right? So you have to invest in them. And so if you keep following up and spending time on it, it will help me remember you.
Okay. What advice would you give someone who has technical work experience, wants to advance their career in technology, but isn't pursuing an engineering degree?
Can you read that again?
Yeah. What advice would you give someone who has technical work experience, wants to advance their career in technology, but isn't pursuing an engineering degree?
So you're probably not going to like this answer, but I would say get a degree in something that's STEM.
Yeah, that's probably right? What I would agree.
I mean, it depends, right? And STEM to me, right? I mean, we hire physics majors, applied math, right? As engineers, right? You don't necessarily have to have an engineering degree, but it's got to be STEM if you want to get an engineering firm.
Right. Okay. How can we communicate weaknesses effectively without seeming to jeopardize the interview or the impression that someone has of us?
Yeah, it's a terrible question to ask, right? There's on the surface, there's no good answer, because if I ask you what your weaknesses are and you tell me I don't have any, well, that's a terrible answer.
Right.
And if you tell me your weakness is C++ and that's what I'm looking for, that's also not a great answer.
Right.
Right. So this is where the homework comes in. So understand what I'm looking for in the job, and let's try to keep our weaknesses away from those. Right. And there are some general weaknesses that we all have. We can all get better at speaking in public. We can all get better at communication. Right. We can all get stronger in our technical acumen, right? Be that breadth or depth in any given domain. So understand where your weaknesses truly are. That's self-awareness, and that's huge. And then there's the whole communication piece, is how can I tell this person about my weakness and not completely torpedo, right? Which is what the question is. And to me, the best way to do that is to be self-aware of what they are and then find a strength that you have and can demonstrate that you will use to help increase that, right? And so if you're, let's go back to the presentation skills. If you want to say your weakness is I'm just not comfortable presenting in front of large groups, but you know what? I'm really great at talking one-on-one with people, and I have really deep relationships with people. So I'm going to use that by asking friends to help me. I'm going to present to them. Have a plan on how you're going to address that weakness. If you just say I'm terrible at C++ and then stop, it's like, well, this is the wrong person for the job.
Right.
But if you list the weakness, tie it to a strength and how you're going to bolster it, and then have some sort of plan on what you're going to do to mitigate it. And mitigate could be get better at it. Mitigate, it can find a way to make sure it's never in play. Right. So if you aren't good at writing code, well, find a job where you don't write code. There's lots
right.
of them.
Right.
Right. And so this is, again, understanding what it is you want to go do.
Yeah. It all comes back to that. Okay. Yep. What does the security clearance process look like? Does it take a different amount of time for internships as opposed to a full-time hire?
It doesn't take a different amount of time. It's independent of the job. It's dependent on a lot of factors, most of which we, Raytheon, right, hiring managers don't know because we don't actually do it. DSS does it. Actually, it might have a different name. It's the Defense Security, I forget what it stands for, but it's the national org, right? So it's government that does it. So for an intern, right, an intern at Raytheon Ship, we would love for you to have a security clearance. And if we make you the offer and you accept in fall, then you will likely have it by the next summer. In fact, I'm happy to report my daughter, who is a student at the Arizona State University, she'll be a junior, just started an internship here at Raytheon, and she has her full clearance because she got the offer last fall. Mm. As an intern, if you don't get this clearance, we're not going to care. I shouldn't say we're not going to care. It's not going to affect your internship. We will find unclassified work for you. So as an intern, you don't have to worry about it. As a full-time employee, you do, because typically we don't start full-time employees unless there's extenuating circumstances, in which case you would reach out to your hiring managers, like, I really need this job now. Is there anything we can do? But typically we wait for the clearance to come in. The process it's not complicated, but it's a bit onerous because I think it's 10 years. You have to list, for example, every place you live for the last 10 years, which can be it can be a lot for college students, right? You might have a new place every year or even every 6 months. You're not allowed to have any gaps, not even a day. Right? So you have to account for every single day of where you've lived for the last 10 years, for example. You have to start listing out relatives and where they live and how old they are and that kind of stuff. You have to list all your foreign contacts and all that, right? So there's some data collection. It takes a bit. It's kind of a pain to fill out, but it's not complicated. It's easy information to get. you submit it to Raytheon, and then Raytheon turns it into DSS, and then we get notified when they're done with it. There's this thing called interim clearance, right? So the DSS org, they can look at the application, and they can say, you know what, this person looks pretty good. We're pretty confident they're going to get a final clearance. We'll just give that person an interim clearance, which means they give you a clearance before you they really do the full investigation. Those are great. Those can happen in weeks. The full clearance usually takes 6 to 9 months.
Okay. Are there any select skills that you think more people should have because they help tons in a workplace environment?
Well, this is going to be very hiring manager dependent, I think. I mean, there's general skills like the ability to communicate, which you're going to demonstrate in your interview. Teamwork, things like that, right, that are applicable everywhere. Then it's just a question of, I think the answer is no, there's not necessarily one skill that's more important than another in general, but for a given job, it's about understanding what that job is looking for. So this, again, I'm going back to the old know what you want to do. If you really know what you want to do and you start honing your skills around it, then find jobs that are in that area and they'll just line up naturally.
Okay. Let's see. Here's one. I'm already looking at the job requisitions that I'm interested in. I have found that a couple of keywords, which are technologies that are repeating and don't seem to be aware of what it entails. How do I sell myself if in case I end up getting an interview?
So they're asking, there's words in the resume or the job rec that they don't fully understand. So how
right.
do they make sure it speaks to it?
Right.
Research.
Okay.
I mean, there's terms that mean everything and therefore mean nothing, right? I'm a model-based engineering type of guy, so that sometimes that's called digital engineering, or there's all sorts of names, digital thread, digital twin. These might be things you hear about. They mean different things to different persons.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way is to go onto that company's website and poke around, right? See what they do. See if they mention it and maybe give even the context of what they mean by, you know, let's say digital engineering, but it could be anything. But definitely research it. You want to research the company anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are things you don't understand, you got to go look them up. If you know people at the company, you can certainly ask them, because, yeah, it's not great if your definition of digital engineering is very different than mine and you come in all locked and loaded, ready to talk about your version, and it's not what I'm looking for, that's not going to be a good interview.
Right. Okay. Do you have advice for interviews where I don't have all the listed technical skills? What do I say if they ask about it?
Well, the first answer is be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got the interview, you've already passed the first test, right? You've made it through the screening criteria of, does this person have the basic skills that someone might need for this job? So know that you've passed that test. Generally, certainly at Raytheon, right? Maybe in other fields, this is not the case, but at Raytheon, when we interview someone, we want to hire that person, right? I don't want to interview 10 people for one job. I want to interview one person for one job. It's way more efficient.
Right.
And plus we actually need 10 people. We need way more than that, right? So we want you to be successful in the interview. We may ask questions that seem like we don't, but we definitely do. So understand the rec. If you know what is in that job description and kind of what they're looking for, and you don't have something on there, what is your plan to get better at it? Make sure it's a realistic plan. I mean, there's a zillion things you can find on the internet. I'll keep going back to the coding. If you know Python but not C++, and I'm looking for C++, well, I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't think you could learn it. So know that. And then say, you know what? I'm going to go on the internet and I'm going to figure out how to learn C++. And I'm just going to start playing around with it. So that's what I'm going to do in the next 6 months or whatever, right? And it's really the same for, I think, any engineering skill. You can go learn more on the internet. You can go buy books. You know, whatever your learning mechanism is, have a plan on how you're going to get it better.
Okay.
I don't know that I would volunteer that information until I was asked.
Right, right. Okay, I have a question from an incoming freshman to ASU Barrett, the Honors College, majoring in computer systems engineering, and I guess it's cyber. So I'm planning on making a model surface-to-air missile system for a project I wanted to do over my college career. Would that be a project something Raytheon would find interesting?
Yeah, the short answer, we make surface-to-air missiles. It's what we do, right? So the more your project looks like me, the more I'm going to be interested in that resume, the more likely I'm going to be to give you a call, right? The point of the resume is to get that first phone call, and then you start selling yourself verbally, right? Because then you can really talk through the details, and then hopefully you get the in-person interview. So that would absolutely be a good thing for Raytheon, and there would be analogs for any company, right?
Yeah. This is an excellent example of a student knowing what they want and why.
Yeah.
So that's a good goal to have in mind. So for the ones that are listening, listen up. That's a good example, great example. Okay. What are some research efforts currently going on in model-based engineering? I'm doing my PhD in systems engineering and trying to understand what is important to industry right now.
Well,
what you can share.
Industry doesn't know what's important to industry right now. We are still figuring this stuff out, right? And different companies are at different levels. So in my mind, right, the whole point, the whole purpose of model-based engineering or any initiative is to do things better. So finding ways to do, if model-based engineering or model-based design or whatever is something you're interested in, what are ways we can deploy that so it makes what we're doing today better? Maybe it's faster. Hopefully it's faster. Hopefully it's cheaper. And hopefully it gives me a better product, right? You can get all three of those things if you do it right. So if you can find ways or think of ways to deploy, I would say the canvas is wide open when it comes to model-based engineering at this point, and people are still figuring out what it means.
Okay.
And for the record, this is what I do day in and day out, and I'm still trying to figure it out. Okay. I have ideas, but I have not figured it out.
Yeah. This is from a student. Do you come across a lot of resumes made with LATEX?
LaTeX, we do.
Oh, do you? Okay, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a typescripting language. It makes for very attractive documents. It also is appealing to computer geeks like myself because it shows that you can use LaTeX, even though I don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a type of language. So it shows an amount of computer savviness that appeals to people that are looking for people that are computer savvy. To people who have no idea what it is, it still makes it an impressive looking document. So there's no downside.
Okay. All right. So are there any more questions? Oh, okay. Hey, I've got one more. If you've got any, we've got like 5 or 10 minutes left, 5 minutes. What are your thoughts on machine learning and its applications to real-time control of systems and engineering? Is it really happening? I thought Arrow was more conservative in the sense they go ahead with what works, but do it with a lot of rigor.
Well, yeah, certainly the aerospace engineering has to be a little more risk averse in this area than some other industries. But it's happening, right? This is another thing. It's kind of like model-based engineering. I'd say it's in its infancy, but it's going to happen. At what speed and at what level is still to be determined, but there's no question that machine learning is going to be used to improve the way we do engineering design and the way our systems work. Will aerospace lead that? We might, because the thing about aerospace is you have a major problem with size, weight, power, right? Because everything's got to be constrained and you got weight problems, you know, and you can't just throw, you know, more propulsion because that makes things heavier and then you need more lift, et cetera, et cetera. It's very highly coupled. So it could be an area that is, that aerospace actually leads in some spaces. Certainly Raytheon is looking at machine learning very heavily and investing in using it.
Okay. All right, this will be the last question for this webinar. Does it count that a candidate used more than three computer languages, or would it be better to narrow down one language? And also, for those who double major, like EE and CS, computer science, are there advantages from them?
Yes, there are advantages. I would certainly call those out. Right. Say, hey, I got a double major or even a major and a minor, and here's why. I need to know why. Why did you get engineering and math? Because they're related, but it's still more work, so there had to have been a reason. So that's good. And I would list all the computer programming languages.
Right.
It shows that you can quickly pick them up.
Right. I would agree with that. Okay. We are done with the questions. Thank you so much, Tom, for your time and for your valuable information. I think the great takeaway is know what you want and why you're pursuing what it is that you are wanting to pursue. Can't stress that highly enough. So thank you so much for being here with us, and thank you for the students for being proactive and attending this session and asking your questions. Because you're one step closer to what it is that, you know, you want to pursue. So thank you very much. So this ends the webinar. And I'm going to stop the recording.